B-Pod Studios.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
2 days ago now, there was a report from Mark Stein that came out that said the Sixers and ownership were going to cut the salaries of anyone in their organization making over $50,000 by up to 20%. For 17 hours from the time Mark Stein put out that report from the New York Times to the time Josh Harris issued a statement where he apologized on behalf of his ownership group and personally apologized for coming up with an idea and admitting that he got it wrong. In the 17 hours, there was public backlash from Philadelphia and 76ers fans. A player upstaged his own owners in Joel Embiid, saying that he was going to pledge not only $50,000 to study coronavirus and victims of coronavirus, but he was also going to help out the employees of the organization itself that were going to suffer from this pay cut. You also had national media come out, Adrian Wojnarowski, Ramona Shelbourne, and Sham himself come out and say different things about dissension in the ranks of ownership and also dissension within the team itself, saying any contracted employee that's not guaranteed next year, why the hell would I give more money back? Why would I take a pay cut right now? Why would I agree to that? After all the fallout, the Sixers then, of course, retract the statement. Other teams, other owners around the NBA, according to Adrian Wojnarowski, and it only makes sense, were watching what the Sixers were doing and also watching the public's, i.e. Philadelphia's, reaction to the news. And what this did yesterday, I think, was help stop a huge boulder from being thrown in the middle of a pond, and the ripples that would have come after this with the amount of people throughout league offices, throughout franchises across the NBA, the amount of people that would have lost money had Sixers fans, had Joel Embiid not reacted the way they did to this news. So I applaud the people for actually rising up, making sure their voices were heard, whether it be on social media, whether it be calling into this radio station yesterday, because we certainly discussed it at length, and the NBA, rather the 76ers, decided to quote-unquote reverse that decision and not give up to 20% pay cuts of employees. So good on Philadelphia, good on Joel Embiid for actually making their voices heard, because I think it stopped a huge ripple effect throughout the rest of the league. And that's what I was worried about. I even said it yesterday. I'm not necessarily worried about this one decision. I'm worried about what this decision means for what's next. Because if the Sixers were going to jump in the pool of cutting people's salaries by 20% now, up to 20% now, when we're only now, what at the time, 13 days removed from their last game played, where are we going to be 2 months from now? Where are we going to be a month from now? Where are we going to be in terms of cutting people's salaries, taking away money from people that need it when you didn't have to do it? And it only further proves the fact that they did reverse the decision, that they didn't need to do it in the first place. They could find an alternative. So Philadelphia, I applaud you. Joel Embiid, I applaud you. It's a great way for this entire community to step up and realize that they can have each other's backs the way they did in this. I was baffled yesterday when talking about the minds that have been very successful in the business world, that they couldn't come up with a better way solution than this. And then sure enough, 24 hours later, boom, there's a better solution. Nobody's losing money.
Yeah, and I'll say this again.
That's amazing.
Yeah, this is going to be really weird now, because if this goes on for as long as we're thinking, you know, we're talking about NFL maybe getting to training camp in July, whatever. But if this keeps going on, as we said yesterday, like some of, you know, Trey pointed out so well, this might have been a good business move. Like, you know, if it saves jobs, I think it was a little too early, but this might be something that they have to do down the line. You know, maybe in another month they have to do this. Well, how the hell do they revisit it now? After they've pulled it off, you know, they throw it down, then they pulled it back. How do you revisit it? Like, what do you do if you have to do something? This isn't going to end well at all. This is just the beginning.
And Trey, you fully acknowledge the business ramifications here.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand the business ramifications of it. I mean, because you say that no one's losing money. Yeah, the Sixers are losing money right now. They're losing up to possibly over $3 million per game. That's six games right now that they haven't played. So what's that, 18 mil that they've just lost over these six games right now? So somebody's losing money.
I know that the people, they're not going to look at I know the number that got mentioned a million times yesterday, whether it be on social media, whether it be on our show, was the $3.8 billion Josh Harris is worth, right? The net worth. Well, that's just one owner. And the Sixers are just one of his revenue streams. And Jamie talked about the Apollo Management Group and how they're doing all right here. So I don't mind if an owner has the means to take care of others, go ahead and do it. Because when you buy a team, it's not just a business. And what I was reminded of yesterday was when this ownership group came in and bought the 76ers, I'm always wary when you talk about people not from the area, whether or not they're going to understand the purchase that they're making, that they're not just buying a business, they're not just buying another revenue stream. They're buying a huge piece of our community, whether that be the laundry that we root for the players that wear it, or whether that be the people in the ticket office that we might be friends with, the people that we might be related to that are working for the organization. I got friends in the organization. I got people that I know in that organization. That you got to realize that you're also buying into a community. And I always wonder whether or not that's going to be the case for people that aren't from the community. And yesterday, it gave me that fear again. And then when they reversed it, I thought, okay, at least they acknowledged what the people were saying, but still, it doesn't make it any better. It just the fact that they didn't exhaust every option. And when you see the report come out from Adrian Wojnarowski say that coaches, other members of the staff that are under contract and don't have another year after this one, that there's apprehension. Well, I would hope so. I hope no one would be saying, oh, yeah, here's money. Take it back, please. Especially when I don't know whether or not I'm going to work for the team next year. Not only was it a bad look, it turns out also to be a bad business decision. And the fact that less than 18 hours of actually it going public, less than 18 hours, you all of a sudden have a better way to deal with it. So yeah, why not take the extra time? Yeah.
It's like, well, okay, if you were able to revert the decision that quickly, then it wasn't really about, the bottom line. And Trey's points are all valid about business ownership, but it's hard for people to ever get their head around billionaires. Like, this isn't a small business owner locally, like the pizza shop owner in Jersey that took out a loan. I mean, like, Josh Harris has made 8 times his value, his original investment with the Sixers. You would think just that alone is enough to, try and float his staff that has busted their ass for him over the years. So it's just hard to digest. Like, the points are all valid. I understand why you would want to. I just can't get my head around it when you're that rich. That's another level of rich.
Yeah, and Trey made the point earlier today, and I've had some friends tell me this also, and it's a good one, that you can't marry Josh Harris's individual success with owning the 76ers. Like, he's worth $3.8 billion, yeah, but he doesn't take out of that to run the Sixers. That's just another organization he owns. I hear that. I understand that. My only question is, like, why did they have to, after 2 weeks, go to this, oh, we need to cut back because we need to put our finger in the dike of not making money? Like, I'll equate it to us as individuals. All right, if we weren't working, hopefully for weeks, maybe months, we'd be okay because of what we have in the bank or what we've saved. Don't they have a huge, huge amount of money and the billions that they make as the NBA, as a team in the NBA, to draw from to take care of themselves for more than 2 weeks?
Yeah. Jamie, I saw you put this out there yesterday. Because we made the point yesterday, Bob, to that point, of we talk about the average Joe that might have to live paycheck to paycheck. Are the billionaires really going paycheck to paycheck?
Because yeah, that's what I honestly ask that as a question. I really do. Like I said, I had a friend tell me yesterday, look, when there's no money coming in, you have to cut back. And he is a very good businessman and helps run a business. I understand that. But isn't there isn't there a pot of gold that you can draw from all the money an NBA team makes through the years? I can't imagine you can't stay afloat for a little while.
Yeah, 13 days. That's when the announcement came out, 13 days after the last game. It still boggles my mind, to say the least, about it. The other thing here is I know there's other businesses that are hurting, and I know people are saying, well, I'm losing money, I'm losing a job, I'm missing out here because of all the shut down. And I'm not saying that that's right or wrong, but I'm saying is it right then if other people are that more people should? Of course not. I think I want as many people in our community taken care of as humanly possible. And if Josh Harris and the ownership group are going to step up, reverse that decision, then more power to them. But still, it seems extremely odd that it wasn't the announcement yesterday, the apology yesterday wasn't, you know what, after the public backlash and all the people's and Joel Embiid stepping up and all that, we're going to take some time. We're going to figure out a better way to do this. No, it wasn't that. It was, this is the way that, you know, we're sorry, we're not doing it. Like, that's that was the announcement. That was the statement made by the 76ers. It wasn't like, okay, there's got to be a better way. It was, no, we're just not doing it. And I also find that to be extremely interesting in all this. And we all have our circle of friends. Bob, you mentioned your friend that's a good businessman. Jamie, you mentioned your friend on Wall Street. I heard from my one friend, and we always argue over the ethics of business and the ethics and moral compass of professional franchises and versus, you know, the player versus the dollar, the fan versus the dollar, the employee versus the dollar. And when that guy texted me yesterday saying, what the hell is the Sixers team doing when they could absolutely weather this storm? It doesn't make any sense. And when that person said it, I went, okay, yeah, this is all seeming like it is not exactly well thought out. And the fact that 18 hours of the story breaking, they have a different solution, it shows you that, yeah, they should have taken a little bit more time on it.
And Jamie, you're better at this than everybody else, but I did see a snippet today, and I don't know if you saw anything more on it, that Ben Simmons has basically taken down anything Sixers related. I looked, I saw he didn't have a picture anymore of himself. There was nothing Sixers on his Twitter account. Like something that I saw said that he's kind of taken a step back because he's embarrassed.
Yeah, I don't. I went and looked, and there is nothing on either profile. But I don't recall what it was beforehand.
Right.
I think his Twitter picture was always black, like it is now, with just like a crown on the header.
I did. Okay.
I think, yeah, but I don't know if he had anything in his bio that said Sixers player, whoever. So I unfortunately just can't confirm. I don't know.
All right, well, I'm going to take it as true because you said about something on the internet, so that means it's automatically
true.
It's
got to be true.
Yeah, I mean, what are we talking about here? I didn't believe about Joe Exotic until I saw it on the internet, and then I saw it on the Netflix, and then I realized
that has to be seen to be believed, Mark.
I very rarely will I turn a show on Netflix and go, what the hell am I, what is this? And then I gave it the extra 5 minutes that I gave it before I was like, okay, I'm in, was because Trey and Jamie were like, yo, you got to watch this. It's this crazy thing.
Me too. Me exactly.
I'm watching it first 20 minutes or so. I'm like, no, I'm not. No, no. All right, for Trey and Jamie, I'll give it an extra 5 minutes. And then I was in for another, like, hour and a half. So thanks for selling me on that.
It is a wild series.
Have you ever held an exotic animal?
No.
I've seen people...
I had a koala bear poop in my hand.
What did you hold?
Conrad the koala.
I held some kind of boa. Like a giant yellow and white one.
Nope.
It was in elementary school. They came to our school.
So yeah, you know.
Yeah, okay. Like one of the big heavy ones. I couldn't hold it myself. It was like me and five other kids.
I'm out.
Okay.
Can't do it.
Yeah, no, I've never held any exotic animals now. No.
I don't need to. I really don't feel
good.
The
need.
Yeah, I'd pet a tiger. You know what I mean? I'd pet a tiger. You know what I wouldn't pet? I wouldn't pet a snake. I don't get near snakes. I am not a fan of them, even a little bit. And that's the one part of the show that I could have done without. And that was like an opening scene. That was like an opening scene. Like a big boa constrictor comes out, and I'm thinking, yeah, no, I'm good. I'm not doing it. Hey, Sam, I have out on Twitter right now, I just tweeted out Adam Schefter's draft idea, where you can hold a round of the draft each night for a week and give team more time. They're not all in the same room, so they could all talk. It also gives fans something to watch every single night, every night of the week. And also, it's like a Hanukkah of drafts, only 7 crazy nights. Not too bad right there. Let's put out the Twitter question, whether or not people actually approve that or not. And we'll put that out there as well. I think it's a great idea. When we come back, we'll hear from Sham himself about dissension in the owner's ranks of the 76ers. And then, Trey, we'll get a little bit into what the next move could be for the Eagles. We also have somebody breaking quarantine of the professional sports world to go see their girlfriend. Plenty of stuff to get to. And also, you talk about people losing money in this economic crisis and all overall health crisis that we're in right now. Ladies and gentlemen, there's one aspect that we haven't even addressed yet. And we're going to get to that in a second here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
I do want to just give a shout out to our Twitch audience here that is viewing us as I have my phone set up and now it's gone, and I'm going to try to get back to that as soon as humanly possible for the good people of the Twitcherverse, I guess. But apparently you can't change your Twitch name once you make it because somebody put their Twitch name as the Unicorn Lover. And they're trying to change it. I guess they don't like that anymore. Huh. I think it's a good one. I think it's a good one, personally.
It's awesome. Yeah, I'm stuck with FLG72, huh? I wanted to change it.
But, oh, wait. Do you have a Twitch account?
Of course.
Because you don't comment on this, do you?
I just commented.
What did you just say?
I said I don't eat grits.
Oh, that was you.
Oh, you don't eat grits?
No, I don't eat grits. I do shrimping grits, but just to sit around and
shrimping grits. I was just going to say that's one of my favorites.
Yeah, I do shrimping grits, but just to sit around and have grits. No, it's not my thing. I don't know.
I will.
Bawa grits are pretty good.
Yeah, Trey, I would fight. I'd lose, but I'd fight you, and I'd fight you for shrimping grits. Like I would like Jamie. I think we have a shanking relationship where we shank each other for different things.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd flat out shank you in front of your whole family if it meant I get my hands on a big old bowl of shrimp and grits, my friend.
I did notice that Ben Simmons has been doing a couple Call of Duty live streams with other NBA players on Twitch, and I want to check it out. Not that I've never really watched people play video games before, but if it's Ben Simmons and five other NBA guys playing Call of Duty, I think I'll check it out.
Yeah, supposedly, when they were waiting for other guys to get on it last week to play Call of Duty, like the conversation they were having was, can you believe that people aren't taking the quarantine seriously? And I was like, when I heard about that, I was like, oh, good for you guys. Take a stand, even though you might not even know your cameras are on just yet. But apparently, yeah, they were coming down on the people. And how about that? Well, I mentioned it to Shefty. There is a story out there over the last couple of nights. People rented an Airbnb in Philadelphia just to throw a house party for their friends. And this is like a regular residential street in Philly, you know, neighborhood street where everybody knows everybody for the most part. And you got this house being rented out across the street. The owner of the house found out about it, called and said, hey, what are you doing? You can't be throwing a party. And they're like, yeah, whatever. And they continued throwing the party. Is it at a point where you can you could report this, obviously, right? If people are throwing a party?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
That's illegal now, is it not?
Yes, cops will come, as far as I heard yesterday, at least over here in New Jersey. If you congregate and someone gets a hold of the police, they will come and make you break it up. Otherwise, citations will be given.
It's unbelievable that so many people are just like, yeah, whatever, I'll do whatever the hell I want. It doesn't make any sense, and it doesn't help anybody, because we're all trying to get, like, I saw somebody tweet this the other day, and I think it's a great point. Like, right now, remember in school, or Trey, even in sports, right? The coach would say, oh, so-and-so messed up. Everybody take a lap, right? I feel like I'm in school right now, and I'm in a position where I'm being good, but, like, one other kid in class is ruining it for everybody else, so we lose time at recess. Like, oh, if you guys keep this up, it's five more minutes off recess. That's how I feel right now when I see a story about a house party being thrown when everyone should be observing the rules of quarantine.
Yeah.
I saw something. All those kids that were down in Florida on spring break, did you see that story?
No, what's
this?
Like,
a bunch of them came back, and college kids, like 143 of them, tested positive for coronavirus. If they're all gathering down in spring break, like, what? I don't understand the thinking.
Really?
Yeah.
Really
cool.
Well, there is no thinking. That's why I can't understand it. Yeah.
No thinking at all. There was another kid that I guess there was a corona challenge. This is so stupid with these challenges. But anyway, there was a challenge, and this kid went and licked the toilet. And, of course, you know, along with probably some other stuff, got corona.
Fecal matter.
You know, telling what's growing around his lips right now. So, you know. There you go.
It's called Darwinism, Trey. And if you're going to go around licking toilets, you're not going to make it.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm hoping this poll, and we just put it out on our morning show Twitter account, at 97.5 Mornings. Adam Schefter said on the show earlier today that he would hold a round of the NFL draft each night for a week. Would you be on board with this idea? And right now, because I think I'm the only person that voted, it's 100% yes. Sam Wilson, who brings us our fine Twitter poll?
Yeah, right. Window Nation, take advantage of Window Nation's 50% off sale on all style windows, plus make no down payment with no payments and no interest for 12 full months. Call 866-90-NATION or visit windownation.com.
All right, thank you very much, Sam Wilson. Now, there was one person, Trey, that you shared with us a story on Slack here about TMZ saying that a Spanish basketball player broke quarantine, or is he a footballer? Is he a soccer player?
I think he might be a footballer.
Okay, so he broke quarantine to go see his girlfriend in Serbia? Is that what I read?
Let's see. I'm just pulling. Yeah, he went to go check out in Serbia.
All right. So he apparently tested. Now, I will say this. If you're going to break quarantine, this is the way to do it. Because he got tested in Spain, then went to, I believe, his native Serbia to see his girlfriend, who is pregnant. So it's not like there was just some like rendezvous. Like, she's pregnant. He wanted to see his family. And he got tested when he was in Spain and then got tested again in Serbia. And then I saw the pictures of this lady, and she's rather attractive.
Oh, yeah. So he was like, listen, I spent enough time building up my white blood cells. I need to go. I need to go take care of some things.
Yeah. So he went out to Serbia to go see, I guess, his future baby mama. So that's one quarantine broken. Then there's one more.
You know you got to be attractive if you're willing to risk it all.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he just broke quarantine, jail time, all of that. Let's go.
But he's being threatened with jail time now, is he not?
Yeah, that's what they're saying, that he's facing jail time.
All right.
Wow.
Well,
I hope it was worth it.
Well, again, he got tested. In Spain, and then he got tested again in Serbia. Both times came back negative. And by the way, while we're talking about tests coming back negative, how about Charles Barkley just releasing the other day? Like, that took a while. It seemed like it took a while. He released that he did not have coronavirus. He tested negative for coronavirus after thinking he had it, getting tested, kind of self-quarantining, calling in to TNT to let him know what was what. The test did come back negative, just to follow up on that story from a couple of days ago. But one of the other things here, we're talking about people losing money. Did you see this story about this Instagram model, Trey? Now, Instagram models have done well for themselves in recent years, where one Instagram model, Abigail, I can't remember her last name off the top of my head, but Abigail, she's very popular on Twitter, Abigail Ratchford. She said that she makes $500,000 a year just by posting pictures on Instagram. She is a legit Instagram model. Like, this is how she makes her income. Well, apparently, during all this, all the people that pay her to wear their memorabilia, to wear their stuff, to plug their stuff, they're backing out left and right. So she has taken a huge hit. She didn't specify as to how much, but she's not making anywhere near the $500,000 that she was making per year based off sponsored posts and paid shout-outs on her Instagram sales. So the Instagram models apparently are taking a huge hit in this economy as well. What can we do to help that? We already solved the Sixers problem, Trey. What can we do to help Instagram models?
I have no idea.
Clickety click.
Yeah, I guess so. We click
Jamie,
on it.
Uh-huh. Jamie, I'll go to you for this.
I guess just double tap those hearts. I don't know.
Sam?
I'm not giving any Instagram models a donation.
Oh, no. Don't worry.
That's what I don't understand. So, like, if obviously I don't think many people would be willing to donate to keep paying them. And then if companies are backing out, I don't see how they would make money unless you went to old posts and they just reposted their old ones and you clicked that, right? Because they would have to keep paying you if they were bringing in stuff from old posts.
Yeah, like if the companies are paying you, that's one thing. But isn't this a time for Instagram accounts to thrive?
That's what
I
thought.
Everybody's just...
Yeah, I've been so bored. I'm doing every single repost challenge.
If Joe Exotic is killing it right now on social media, why the heck aren't the Instagram models killing it on social media? You know what I'm saying?
Can technically still post. They just don't have people to back them up and pay them for the post right now.
Right. Bob, do your business friend weigh in on this one? How can he help the Instagram models?
No, I think Joel Embiid should make a heavy donation towards them in order to keep them going, just as he did to the 76ers.
And now...
I don't know if his real model girlfriend will like that.
No, that's they don't.
They're all Sam. One big happy family, Sam.
Yeah, Sam. We're all brothers and sisters. We're all brothers and sisters. There we go. We solved that problem. As far as I'm concerned, just have Joel Embiid get involved. That's very nice. Now, Trey, we just had this idea from Adam Schefter about the draft. Well, there's some other ideas floating around about the NFL. Most notably, one surrounding our man Carson Wentz. Now, Bleeding Green Nation put out a story a couple of days ago, and we touched on it on Monday about the leadership in the Eagles locker room. Well, the Eagles have moved on from Malcolm Jenkins, who was the leader, really, the guy that was the first, we all we got, we all we need, and they're still riding that slogan out two seasons after winning a Super Bowl. Now you look at maybe moving on from him to go to Carson Wentz and make sure he takes over as a leader in the locker room, if not the leader in the locker room. You've also passed up on a couple of different veteran wide receivers that you could have brought in here and for whatever reason chose not to. Do you think that really this part of the plan, Trey, of this offseason, not just to move on from Malcolm Jenkins, but also maybe not bring in a DeAndre Hopkins, maybe not bring in somebody not nearly as talented, but somebody that could still be a help in a Robbie Anderson. Do you think that the reason they're going to wait out, or one of their purposes, rather, in this offseason, is handing the leadership reins over to Carson Wentz?
Yeah, possibly. I don't think that, you know, that they should be. Carson's going to be the leader regardless. You know, you just don't want to bring somebody in that's going to come in and rock the boat, or anyone that's going to come in and create more issues like we had to deal with over these past couple years with the leaks going to Josina Anderson. So you just kind of want somebody that's going to come in and do their job, be a weapon for Carson, and then you move on. But, you know, I don't see this being one of the main reasons that you don't go after any of the free agents. Maybe they're just, I have no reason, no understanding why they haven't made any moves on some of these guys. But you're just going to put a lot of pressure on your ability to draft the right guys. And, you know, it makes me a little nervous at times just because of what's happened in the past, you know, but hopefully they get out there and get the right ones that's going to actually come in. And then that's a lot of pressure that you're putting on rookies to come in and be impactful right out of the gate.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. Real quick, Mark, think how cheap that offense is too. Take away Carson Wentz, but Miles Sanders, rookie deal. You're going to have probably two wide receivers, rookie deal. Often your new left tackle, rookie deal. Like you've saved a lot. They're saving a lot of money on the offensive side of the ball. A, is it because they think Carson Wentz is that good they can get by with it? Or B, was this the game plan all along that the money goes on D and it doesn't go to the offense?
Look, I'm certainly going to hope that the front office doesn't have to orchestrate a plan to make your quarterback, your franchise quarterback, a leader. I certainly hope that wasn't the case. And when we talked about this on Monday, I said, I flat out, no, you're not moving on from Malcolm Jenkins to make Carson Wentz more of a leader. You're moving on from Malcolm Jenkins because you don't think he's going to be worth the money and worth the second year at $8.5 million like the $16.5 million that he got from New Orleans. It really would be an indictment on Carson Wentz's leadership if the front office had to get involved in pushing his leadership along. Now, other than Alshon Jeffrey, who seems to have run the media and been that snitch that we've talked about, other than that, that's the only thing I want to see them do to help out Carson Wentz and whether or not he can be a leader in this locker room so that you don't feel as if you always have somebody running to the media to let them know what's going on behind the scenes. That's the only thing and the only cause that I will support from the front office trying to move on to make sure Carson Wentz is taking those leadership reins. But as far as any other wide receiver coming in here, if it's going to be the draft, great. Adam Schefter, when he was on with us, talked about the Eagles adding 3 to 4 different wide receivers in this upcoming draft with the 8 picks. So maybe even half the picks they have being used on wide receivers or at least offensive weapons. I wouldn't be opposed to that, even a little. But if you're not going to go and even get a guy like Breshad Perriman, for instance, and take a flyer on him, which is more than what the Jets really did, aside from it being a one-year deal, $8 million? I mean, that's not cheap.
I'm kind of shocked, Mark, that they didn't bring in one of these guys, if more or less, just as a decoy signing, because going into the draft, everybody knows that this is clearly your plan. Schefter's been telling us that for like a month now. But I thought, you know, maybe a Perriman or an Anderson. I wasn't in love with them, but I thought at least as a decoy, so you're not as desperate on draft day and teams don't know that. But what Trey was saying, you know, they have to be right about these guys. That's why I'm convinced they're going to trade up. Like, mm-hmm. I think for them to have to be right, they have to go get one of these big three. And yesterday it just hit me. I'm 100% confident that they're going to trade up in the first round and go get one of those three guys.
Totally agree with you, Jamie. Totally agree with you on that.
CeeDee Lamb, Jerry Jeudy, Henry Ruggs III, top three.
I want Lamb the most. Jeudy would be two, and Ruggs would be three. But I'd be happy with any of the three of them because of what Trey said. You know, if you're putting all your eggs in this basket, you gotta be right. And to me, I think CeeDee Lamb would be. That would be a lot of fun.
Well, not to scare you, but your best friend, Mike in KOP, brings up a great point on Twitter. 2017 was supposed to be an idiot-proof running back draft. Eagles got Donnell Pumphrey.
I can't defend that one. I'm not going to go on Donnell Pumphrey Hill and die there. So
yeah,
you got me there, Mike. There's a decent point from Mike for once.
Oh, wow. Well, apparently the Sidney Jones thing isn't looking so good either because our friend Derek Gunn of NBC Sports Philadelphia said the other day that when it comes to that other cornerback position for the Eagles this offseason, not only are they going with Darius Slay, but it also looks like they're going to promote within, and it looks like Avante Maddox is going to be your starting corner opposite Darius Slay. Now,
Sidney Jones is working with that specialist, though, Mark. Get excited.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
he helped close out. Sidney Jones hype train. Yeah, it's back on the tracks, baby.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about that one.
I wouldn't count on him as a starter in any way. That would be ridiculous.
Right, and the Eagles have usually three corners on the field anyway. So that's going to be an up for grabs spot, that whoever's going to be getting that playing time. But Darius Slay, as of right now, in your base defense, it looks like Darius Slay will be on the field with Avante Maddox as your other corner. Now, Trey, let me ask you this. A little off the cuff here. I know we've talked about this before, but Avante Maddox, can he play on both sides of the football field? Because Darius Slay might be matched up just against one-on-one against whoever the other team is their best defender, or excuse me, their best receiver. So would you have confidence in saying to Avante Maddox, well, all right, you're going to have to go on either side of the field here?
Yeah, I don't know how that's going to play out, you know, because he's always played on the left side, correct? So he's always been on the left side. Jalen Mills was on the right. So
predominantly, yes.
Yeah, so... Yeah, I have no idea if he can play both sides. But like even like what Lito was talking about yesterday, you're going to play a little bit of man. You're going to play a little bit of zone. You're going to mix this thing up to keep the offenses off guard. So, yeah, you might have Slay roaming around or following, but then you might see who knows how they're going to try to scheme this thing up. All you want to do is get your best 11, well, your best six out there, you know, in that backfield to make sure that you got guys out there that can get it done, or best four or five. Yeah, 4 or 5. Yeah, to get it done. So, you know, can he play over there on the other side? I do not know. If you could play one side, you could play the other to me. I mean, you know, when it comes to corner.
Yeah, I know that he's willing, let's put it that way, because the way he wants to be on the football field. And the other is that, I mean, he's gone from a starting corner, he's gone to a nickel, he's gone to safety even. I believe he was the safety in the game against the Jaguars over in London. So, like, he is willing to play whatever position he can, you know, he's got the confidence at least to do it. So, hopefully that's the case. Hopefully that will come to fruition on the football field. And we all said, just skill-wise, overall, if you're making a decision just based on skill, Avante Maddox is your other starting corner. Sidney Jones has yet to earn it. Rasul Douglas looks like he's on the outs. And Craven LeBlanc hasn't proven it as much as a guy like Avante Maddox has yet. Craven LeBlanc, though, I'm not sleeping on. I'm not saying he's bad or anything. I'm just saying if there's of the three guys, the guy that's earned it the most so far, in my opinion, is Avante Maddox. And that seems to be the way that the Eagles are going. 610-632-0975. 610-632-0975. When we come back, 9 o'clock, top of the hour, we're going to be joined by Keith Pompey of Inquirer.com. He had a lot on the Sixers. First off, the Sixers report coming out initially Monday night. And then yesterday, after the story came out and after the story got shot down by the Sixers fan base, Joel Embiid and all that, Keith Pompey had a lot to talk about when it came to the Sixers ownership and their direction moving forward. We'll talk to Keith Pompey at the top of the hour, 9 o'clock. We'll also hear from Sham himself, who talked about dissension in the ranks of the the ownership group about this Sixers decision. We'll get to all that in a few here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
The Fanatic.
So yesterday, a bunch of phases came out. I like to describe it as phases in the Sixers' decision here with what they were going to do with their employees. Phase one, the report comes out. Mark Stein says pay cuts. All right. Phase two, public backlash for 17 hours. Phase three, Ramona Shelbourne comes out and says, Joel Embiid, I got you. Joel Embiid says he's going to get $500,000 for coronavirus relief and also says he's going to take care of employees. Phase four was the Woj tweet saying dissension in the ranks. Apprehension amongst coaches that say, hey, I don't even know if I'm going to be back next year. Why would I give money back now on this contract? And then Shams' report, which we'll hear about in a second, about one owner. So even more dissension in the ranks where an owner says, hey, this wasn't my idea. I would not even know about this. And when Keith Pompey joins us at the top of the hour, he'll get into this as well. But Michael Rubin apparently saying this was all news to him. Phase six was Josh Harris saying, yeah, sorry, my bad. That's not what I wanted to do. Without further ado, Sham himself saying on social media yesterday Michael Rubin was the guy to say, hey, back up. There we go. Was the guy to say, hey, guys, this isn't the way to go. Here's Sham on that report.
Sources tell me 76ers part owner Michael Rubin is upset and outraged over the team deciding to reduce certain employees' payment by up to 20% temporarily. Rubin was not believed to be part of the decision-making process this week among the ownership level, and you're already starting to see the financial ramifications of the coronavirus outbreak start to seep into the NBA level. The 76ers All-Star Center, Joel Embiid, pledged to donate $500,000 toward coronavirus relief funds and also is making a separate commitment to take care of employees that are being impacted by the reduction in payment this week.
So it seems like the thought process didn't exactly go along, go a long time here, Bob. It seems like a couple of things happened. One of the other I guess minority owners, Michael Rubin, came out and said, guys, what the hell are you doing? And then also a player himself, Joel Embiid, came out publicly and said, this is BS. I got to try to help here, whether it be for coronavirus research, whether it be for coronavirus relief, or whether it be for guys that are playing for this team or guys that are working for people working for this team. I got to step up and do something. Do you feel, and I know this theory's out there, Bob, and I think it has a lot of value to it. Joel Embiid basically showed up as bosses.
Yeah, it kind of looks that way. I mean, it looks like that they jumped on their solution right after he decided to make the contribution that he did. And that doesn't look good, you know. And did Embiid do it with the intention of, solely of just helping? Or was it kind of a, what the hell is my ownership doing here? I'm going to help out myself. You wonder, you know, there's going to be dissension. There's plenty of workers, I'm sure, down there that would have been affected by this, that are upset at the handling of it. And you wonder how many of the players are upset too. Like, why? What are we doing here? So it's going to be interesting to see how the rest of this plays out.
Mm-hmm. And when we talked about this earlier, Trey, we have talked about a lot the maturity level of Joel Embiid. And I think this shows a heck of a lot of maturity, especially when Ramona Shelbourne also comes out and says not only is he donating this money for coronavirus relief, not only did he vow to help take care of team employees, but he also, since March 11th, he's been in self-isolation while trying to read up and research everything he can about the coronavirus. So he's also trying to figure out whatever else he can do to help. And he wrote a check for $500,000, writing a check for $500,000, which matches Rudy Gobert's contribution to research for coronavirus and all that. And that's the guy that really sounded the alarm in the NBA because he's the one that tested positive and was the one that was being all willy-nilly about it. So when you look at the maturity level of a guy like Joel Embiid, what does this tell you about, you know, that maturity level?
Oh, I think that this is awesome what he's doing. You know, I think this is extremely generous for him to say, all right, you know what, I'm going to cut a $500,000 check, because I don't care how much money you have and how much money you made, to cut a check like that, you know, that takes a lot for someone to do something like that. And then, which is kudos to him. Now, is this showing his maturity? Maybe, but it's not showing what on the court, though. You know what I'm saying? That's where I'm looking at, is what is production. When he gets back on the court, how is he going to come back in and be the dominant force that I know he can be when he wants to be it?
Somebody's putting out on Twitch right now, Glazy Boy, or G Lazy Boy, Glazy Boy, I don't know, Dr. Process is going to find the vaccine. So Joel Embiid's on the case, apparently.
That's one of the things that he said, though, like when he was talking. I remember an interview that he was like, you know what, I could have, you know, if I didn't play basketball, I probably would have been a doctor. And I'm like, wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, he's a smart, smart guy, and his parents are that way, too, and he was brought up that way. And, yeah, he often said, I know when I used to cover him, he often said, yeah, I would have been a doctor. There's no doubt in my mind. So the fact that he's digging his nose into a book to try to learn more about this and then giving money on top of it, Mark, you're right. That does show to me a maturity level, but I also agree with Trey. I don't know if it's going to translate to the court or not.
Right, like, here's what I know from this, and, look, I don't know that Joel Embiid is going to be the guy that always takes his talent extremely serious the way you would want him to, the way, you know, you'd see other, like, killer athletes kind of go about it. But I know this, just as a man, this is something that he's doing phenomenal. Like, this is just a phenomenal thing that he's doing. And in this day and age, when you see the contributions around the NBA, whether it be from Rudy Gobert, and look, the guy was a jackass. He's admitted to being a jackass. He's apologized about it. He didn't take it seriously. Now he certainly is. Then you see stories come out around the sports world. Zach Ertz donating to $100,000. Zach and Julie Ertz for Phil Abundance. I mentioned Connor Barwin, $25,000. Jason Kelsey, $100,000. Trying to help out the community and making sure everyone has, there's enough food to go around for everybody. It's an amazing thing. And now to say, and people were calling out. People were saying it. They're saying, where's Joel Embiid? Where's Ben Simmons? Well, Joel Embiid, and I'm not going to shame anybody into making a donation. I'm not going to money shame. But yeah, it's nice to see the guys. It's nice to see the haves help out a lot of the people that are, you know, in the have not category. And for Joel Embiid to do this, to think about the entire community here, it's a great thing. And it's something that I just wanted to make sure that we are absolutely applauding today. As for what it means on the court, hey, first off, I hope we get to see him on the court again this season. And I know we all want to see him on the court again this season. That still, it's yet to be seen how it affects that. But as of right now, I will only applaud the man who not only stepped up to help the virus that everyone's trying to combat right now, but also vowed to help the people that are working for the same organization that he's working for. And as much as I applaud the fan base, it's just as much as I applaud Joel Embiid for kind of stepping up there, and Michael Rubin for saying, kind of given a what the hell moment. Because, Jamin, when we talked about this earlier, we were talking about a guy in the ownership group that really understood not just Philadelphia, but the Philadelphia fan base itself. And I think Michael Rubin does get it. Now, he apparently didn't know, and he came out publicly and said this was complete BS. Him and Joel Embiid kind of showed up the rest of the ownership group.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think without Joel Embiid doing what he did, ownership group probably doesn't act, because you can't have your employees that are worth, you know, a fraction of what you are stepping up and doing that. That's just a horrible look. But Michael Rubin also going to the press and look, it's kind of a ballsy move on his part, because he is a small minority owner compared to Harris and Blitzer. So for him to go out there and start leaking it to the press that he's upset and it wasn't discussed, it was just overall top to bottom so poorly handled. It's kind of amazing. But, you know, Rubin and Embiid really pushed it over the top and got them to change their ways.
And those two are very, very close, don't forget. So,
right. Yeah, you know, and Rubin, with Ben as well.
Yeah, and so Rubin probably has Embiid on his side, so he can go out and say something against the owners. What are the owners going to do? I hear you, Jamie. They could buy him out in a second, but, you know, you got to be careful. That's a slippery slope now, and you might have some players looking at the top ownership group, Harris and Blitzer, with a kind of a crooked eye.
Before we talk to Keith Pompey about this a little bit further, I want to talk about the competition in an athlete. And I mentioned the name Connor Barwin a second ago, and I had a chance to interview Connor on Monday. And he's donating $25,000 to Phil Abundance. So he's trying to help out with Zach and Julie Ertz, as well as Jason Kelce. But Connor
Did you
Barwin,
see who else? Real quick, Mark, just on the Phil Abundance, since you mentioned Phil Abundance, Mac and Sweet D from It's Always Sunny, they donated, I forget what amount they did, but then they held a fundraiser on GoFundMe, and I think they raised $105,000 over like 36 hours or something that all went to Phil Abundance. So and Sweet D, yeah.
I saw on Instagram last night that they had made a donation. I didn't realize it was the Phil Abundance. That's fantastic,
man.
That's
it was great. To Phil Abundance.
More people from the community. What, St. Joe's Prep? Rob McElhenney went to?
Yeah, Rob's a prep Joe's? Guy, you know.
He's a
prepper. Yeah, he's a prepper. That pains me a little bit, but he's a good guy.
No, there you go. One of the things, actually, the quarantine is allowing us to do is we're catching up on a bunch of Always Sunny in Philadelphia episodes.
I thought about that the other day. I saw it on demand or on FX or wherever it was, and I was like, oh, now would be a really good time to go back and watch some of those, because those early seasons are classic, man.
But Connor Barwin makes this donation, and now he is going into the front office. Now, look, before last football season, Connor Barwin was in our studio, and he was talking to us about, you know, maybe going somewhere else to play football, maybe coming back. He didn't want to hang it up quite yet. He told me flat out his football playing career is over, but his football career is not over, period. Like, he will go into this front office role, and he will attack it head on the way he would as a player. He also said that he missed out on a Super Bowl here in Philadelphia, which we all know. He wasn't with the Eagles in 2017, but now is with the team in a front office capacity, Trey. You were a player that transitioned to coach. That competitive edge never really leaves. And when I talked to Zach and Julie Ertz last week, they talked about how competitive they are as a couple in like Monopoly. So is there ever a time you turn that switch off where the competitiveness kind of starts to leave you and you figure out a different way to channel it?
Oh, no, that competitiveness is going to always be with you. And you're just going to try to find other ways to kind of pour it into. So for him, I know he's trying to find the best players or trying to help Howie or whatever he can to help this team get to where he wants to be. I know as a player, when you haven't won that championship, you want to go in and in any way you can be a part of helping these guys get another one.
Yeah, and I don't know where a guy, I don't know why you would lose it, but I think when you're trying to translate to other people what you were able to do on the field, like Connor Barwin was a Pro Bowler. Yeah, you were what, a 3-time Pro Bowler, Trey?
Yeah.
Next thing you know, you're trying to coach other players to get to that level, maybe not on the offensive line, but linebackers, of course, and you worked hand-in-hand with Connor Barwin. Mm-hmm. So when you talk about guys, we talk about it a lot with coaches. Guys going from a player to a coach, great players. And I've mentioned it before. Guys like Wayne Gretzky, Magic Johnson, Ted Williams, right? These guys, just to name a few, were phenomenal players and sub-500 coaches. So when you look at those situations, how can a player translate not only the competitiveness, but also the know-how from himself to other players?
Well, because the part of it that has to make it good for that makes you a good coach is that you have to understand the progression of it. You know, you can't expect for someone to just come in and just do what you were able to do. You know, you have to come in and understand the progression that it takes to get there. And then also you have to be a coach can be draining at times, and it can be strenuous on the players because you have to always check that player. You know, you can't let anything slide. You know, you can't let a small one day of bad technique slide, because if not, then it's going to become a habit. So you have to always be on that guy, checking him. Hey, whoa, make sure your head is up. Make sure you turn your head out of your stance. That's why, like my first year when Lane Johnson was here, it was constant every play. Hey, man, hey, make sure when you're in stance, look at him, you know, just yelling different stuff out there, different cues for it to become a habit. And then after that, once it becomes a habit, then you can kind of fall back. But you have to understand the progression. And then again, once the next year falls in, then it's wash, rinse, and repeat. Here we're starting all over again, because now you have a whole new crop of guys that are coming in and that you just have to keep going. So, you know, to be a successful coach, I feel like you have to understand the progression of it and have to be patient. And also, too, you just have to be diligent and don't let anything slide, because if you do, then those little small things will become habits.
You are listening. Oh, real quick, I do want to get an update on our Twitter poll before we get to Keith Pompey from Inquirer.com. But you are listening to 97.5 The Fanatic, WPEN, Burlington, Philadelphia, broadcasting through the Xfinity Studios from our own bunker studios.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.